Hey, Mark, I was listening to Paramore the other day, and it really made me think about the amygdala and the limbic system.
You just made those words up, didn't you?
What, Paramore?
We're the Nevermind the Music podcast, where one musician
and one psychologist
talk songwriting and the mind, one song at a time.
We'll hear everything from Green Day and Outkast
to Stevie Wonder and Dua Lipa.
And we mostly try to stay on topic.
Except for when we don't want to.
Nevermind the Music, wherever you get your podcasts.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome to the Sonic Screwcast, where the Lorehound's your guides to all of time and space. I'm John.
And I'm Alicia, and this is our coverage of the BBC and Disney Plus series Doctor Who.
In this episode, we'll be discussing Season 1, Episode 8, titled The Legend of Ruby Sunday.
And as much as we love discussing the show ourselves, we also want to hear from you. So please send all your thoughts to TARDIS@thelorehounds.com or visit thelorehounds.com/contact. And you can use the contact form there, including the built-in voicemail feature. And do also check out our Discord server where we're talking about these Doctor Who episodes. We have a spoiler thread for each episode as it goes live, and a whole bunch of other things too. Well, you'll find those links in the show notes.
Please also consider subscribing to us on Supercast or Patreon. For as little as $3 a month, you get ad-free episodes and much more, like show guides to certain shows like House of the Dragon. That's going strong. Subscribing is a great way to help us make more timey-wimey podcasts. Alicia, we're going to spoil everything, including we're going to talk about Classic Who today.
Yes, and we're going to talk about like comics and books and things that I love that Russell T. Davies is in his like everything is era canon, and I love that for all of us.
Russell T. Davies is in his I don't give a fuck era. Like he is contradicting himself within a single season. And I will talk about that, but a lot of interesting things happening.
Okay. Well, so what's your hot takes on the episode overall?
Standalone, I think it is a mid-tier episode.
Okay.
I think it does some things well, and it's weaker at some points. I think that certain points, like I thought that the time window thing lasted way too long.
Okay.
That was just way too dragged out. At the same time, I thought that it had the emotional beats down. Like, you know, having Carla, you know, break down, like she's okay with the birth mother, that was really beautiful. Having Ruby be so ready to meet her mother, having the doctor confront the idea of abandoning Susan. All these things were really great. And I love that we're pulling from Classic Who again, because that's really fun. And it's, you know, as we're going into this Disney Plus series, people were nervous, like, are they going to really try to reboot in a way that feels clean? And I don't think so. I think it's the same show. It's just renumbered. and do you know that RTD gave a watch list to prep for this episode?
Okay. What was on it?
It's 5 episodes. Bad Wolf / Parting of the Ways.
Okay.
The Bells of St. John.
Okay.
John Pertwee's Third Doctor episode, Spearhead from Space.
Okay.
Which is the first one he ever did, which I've seen that one. And A Good Man Goes to War and The Church on Ruby Road.
Okay.
So I don't know why specifically he recommended those, but pretty interesting that he gave like homework for this one. He's like, oh yeah, if you want to see all the references, here's the ones to watch.
Right. And he didn't even include some of the obvious references.
Right. the beast below and things like that, or pyramids of Mars.
Yeah, I think exactly.
If he would have said it's pyramids of Mars, I think people then would have just guessed the people, villain.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Because they say Sutek like 1,000 times in Pyramids of Mars.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I thought it was a good first part. I think it could elevate once I see the other part of the finale. I do think it was a mistake not to air them together.
Okay.
I think it would have hit much better.
I don't know why people are so like anti cliffhangers all of a sudden. I love a fun cliffhanger as long as I'm going to get. I think people are just scared of like cancellations, but that's obviously not the case when in this particular case.
I'm okay with cliffhangers the cliffhanger I like, and I've heard other podcasters talk about this kind of thing. The cliffhangers I like are how will people react to the situation, not what's going to happen next. You know, okay. I like to see aftermath cliffhangers. Mm-hmm. Like the Red Wedding in Game of Thrones. Like cliffhanger is not what's going to not what's going to happen next necessarily. It's how are the different people going to react to what just happened?
Mm-hmm. No, I see your point. I don't know. I guess people have this complaint now that TV shows are too much like movies chopped up, but I don't hate that. I like movies. I think my only concern is like I have the patience to wait a week, and I love speculation and things like that. My only concern is just, will the story be finished? Of course, which sometimes they do an entire show and still don't answer the questions. Lost.
Yeah. Well, I have no patience, but now I'm impatient to hear your take. So, please.
Okay. So indeed it was a cliffhanger. It was more questions than answers, but I expected that going in because I knew it was a two-part episode. I think that's the important thing, also setting expectations. This was a lore heavy episode, so obviously I enjoyed that aspect of it. It was really interesting. You know, I was one of the many diving into the Doctor Who wiki after this, just to see how this new pantheon is stitching together a lot of deep cut lore. So I like that that gives something for every level of Who expertise to get excited about, you know, mm-hmm. Especially Sarah Jane Adventures. I don't know. I might have to start watching that show soon.
I know, right? Like, should I watch this? It's a tantalizing thing. I mean, I just watched Sarah Jane in Pyramids of Mars.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's 5 seasons of it, but 3 of them are 12 episodes. Those are the longest seasons. Like, so it's doable.
Fair enough.
But yeah, I loved the creepiness of aspects of this episode, particularly what happened in the time window, which I can see what you mean about it dragging on too long. That could have been a couple beats shorter. And the Harbingers were also just super creepy. And yeah, I think this was designed to leave us waiting with bated breath for the finale. And I think that it has largely succeeded in that. I would rank it 4th for me in the season so far.
Okay. Well, that's good. I think we have similar but slightly different gauges of this finale, I think. Mm-hmm. But again, I think that my opinion of this episode could change dramatically by how they do it in the next episode.
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
I'm excited to talk about it either way, because there's plenty of lore to dig into. Yes. And if you didn't notice the title of the podcast, we're the lore hounds. We like this stuff.
Literally our shtick.
You have done this lovely outline where you did this quick synopsis followed by a bunch of different sections. Do you want to lead us through it?
Sure. So yeah, I decided let's keep the recap minimal because this isn't necessarily about plot. This is about knowledge being dropped. So the episode is The Legend of Ruby Sunday, and the Doctor, although it was kind of setting the legend more than answering it, as I hoped. But anyway, the Doctor and UNIT investigate Ruby's past, but as the time window reveals horrifying secrets from Christmas Eve, the mysterious triad technology unleashed the greatest evil of all. So thank you to the Doctor Who Wiki for that short recap. But we open immediately in UNIT, so in the Avengers building. I can't unsee that.
Yeah.
Speaking of Sarah Jane Adventures references, are you familiar? How familiar are you with the Brigadier?
Oh, the Brigadier? I mean, he's all over the Third Doctor's era. That's like the whole thing. Okay. The Third Doctor is stranded on Earth and he just takes a job under the Brigadier. He's in every single episode, basically.
Okay. So Kate Lethbridge-Stewart is his daughter. And so we got some nice references there for, you know, the classic Who fans. Did you know, by the way, that Morris Gibbons, the new like head of tech, which, by the way, Shirley will be back. Apparently, RTD said, I think she might have had a scheduling conflict or something for these episodes. Mm. But so Morris Gibbons took over as a science advisor and played by a young actor named Lenny Rush, who's 15 in real life. And he did the main voice in Space Babies.
Oh, that's fun.
He was
a lot of fun.
Yeah, they liked him as that. And they're like, oh, well, we want to actually like see him acting. So they're like, okay, how about this role?
Yeah, I thought he was great. I thought he was great. There were some points where I was like, turn off the machine, idiot. Like, I was just like, with the time vortex, everyone's like, this is terrible. We should stop this. And nobody's just hitting like, the button that says stop.
And you wanted it to stop because you thought the scene was going on too long.
I did want it to stop. I was getting a little like, oh, what's here? What's here? I was like, all right, get to the point.
Yeah. Yeah. So there were also a couple of characters introduced this episode that as soon as they were introduced, I was like, red shirt. And one of them was Harriet. We'll find out her last name was Harbinger. So Harbinger, which harkens back to the Devil's Court episode where Maestro's quote unquote son was Henry Harbinger.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you think she was going to stick around or?
Maestro in general?
No, Harriet.
Oh, Harriet? No. Did not. I mean, the unnamed people somebody actually said, and this doesn't apply to Harriet, but somebody actually said the guards at UNIT are basically the red shirts in Star Trek. Mm-hmm. Like they are just, you see them and they're gone.
Right. Well, but that's also, this is what I was thinking about Harriet and also what I was thinking about the guard who does, they have like, he and Ruby are like, oh, we're both from Manchester.
Right.
And then I'm like, yeah, he's going to die.
Yeah. I forgot that Ruby was from Manchester this whole season. And then she said that and I was like, Jamie Tart, do, 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 do. You know, the accent really made sense to me all of a sudden.
Yeah, no, she has. I have a friend who's not from Manchester, but from environs from Yorkshire, and she sounds just like her. So I'd never forget that.
I do wish that we had her going,
too.
Doctor, what is that ugly thing?
Yeah, that's a slightly different kind of accent, I guess.
Fair enough. But I guess they're alleged to be the same accent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't actually know where is the actor who plays Jamie Tart actually from.
I mean, they keep saying Manchester in the show, but I don't know.
Well, I think also there's more than one accent from, you know, like there's more than one accent from New York.
I think that the actor for Jamie was obviously doing a bit, like he was just exaggerating it to an absurd extreme for comedy.
I love that they right away got into the Susan Twist thing and just immediately knocked out some fan theories. So like people saw the S triad and everyone's like, ooh, it's an anagram for TARDIS. And they're like immediately like, yes, it's an anagram for TARDIS, dumbasses. Of course we knew that.
Right. I do love when they make unit competent, especially Kate. Mm-hmm. I think that this is great. It's like, yeah, we're 10 steps ahead of you, Doctor.
Yeah. And also the whole thing with the granddaughter with Susan, they just totally played with us on that. Or yeah, Davies did. He was like, we found out that it was Sutek, who obviously we'll talk about who that is later. But then just she's mocking him. She starts out as like what seems like a nice lady. And then she's like accidentally evil. And then she's like, do you think I was family, Doctor? Like that's like mocking the viewers at home.
Yeah.
But we found out that the question of the parents is he doesn't know either because it doesn't seem to like he hasn't had any kids yet.
I want to talk about that.
Uh-huh.
Let me introduce my evidence.
Okay.
Which is a Reddit post I found.
Okay.
where somebody laid out all the times the doctor has said, I have kids, just in New Who.
Oh, okay.
Season 2. Doctor, and what about trying to understand them? Rose Tyler, easy to say, you don't have kids. Doctor, I was a dad once. Continues. Mm. Season 3. The doctor, Donna, I've been a father before.
Mm-hmm.
Donna, what? The doctor, lost all that long time ago, along with everything else. Season 1 of this series, episode 4, boom. Dad to dad.
Mm-hmm.
Also, somebody pointed out Empty Child. Before the war, I was a father and a grandfather.
But, okay, here's the thing that we've also gotten all season long is that these gods are apparently messing with, or quote-unquote, making a jigsaw of the doctor's past.
Mm-hmm. So
all lore inconsistencies just got retconned in that one new lore drop. Somebody's messing with his past. That's why things are messy.
Yeah, I could let go of all of them, except I do think it's a little bit sloppy for RTD to, in one episode, say dad to dad, and in another episode be like, never mind, I don't have kids.
Well, but maybe it'll be unmessy if attention is called back to that. Like, but you said that you had from dad to dad, and then like, wait, did I? What? You know?
Yeah, I wonder if it is a clue, and I'm just being like, sloppy RTD. But if not, sloppy RTD.
Yeah. That's the thing is it's hard to judge just based on this like half of a finale. It's hard to judge, you know, whether everything lines up.
Also, I mean, Doctor Who has always been a Swiss cheese slice of plot holes. I'm not going to go all down that rabbit hole.
Yeah. But we did. So first of all, a positive and a negative. The negative is that I feel robbed that we did not get to see Borg Susan Twist. And those other Susan twists, those look like so much fun.
Yeah, yeah. But at the same time, it's like, how many Susan twists do you need?
I mean, if we had a longer season, that could have gone on for...
Fair enough. There used to be 13 episode seasons.
Mm-hmm.
I missed that. That was nice.
Yeah, 13 is a good length. This does feel fast. But... regeneration has now been more fully explained for the newbies. So if we have newbie listeners, I would love to hear whether that makes sense to you.
Yeah, but also there was a weird line that the doctor had, which was, oh, well, we can disguise ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the purpose of regeneration? Has he ever done that? I don't think so.
No. I have to admit that line went over my head. I don't remember it.
He said, oh, we can disguise ourselves. I was like, that's not really the point. It's to survive. Anyway, it was a little weird line. That's what I'm saying. There were a few lines in here that were just like, I don't know about that.
Hmm. I did have one that, I mean, it made sense in a way, but also made me angry, was the doctor said about Susan when they thought it might be, you know, his Susan. He says that he didn't go back because he brings ruin. And what if I go back and ruin her? But that kind of made my blood boil because obviously the best way to ruin someone is to abandon them.
Right. Right. The thing of the doctor, and I go by this theory all the time, is many people say, and I agree with this, that the doctor abandons people before they can die so that he can always go back to them in his head.
Hmm.
Because once they die in the doctor's presence, they're dead. That becomes a fixed point on his own timeline.
Right. That's true. I mean, I guess if how long has she been there? That's a lot of times to go back and visit. But then
since
you don't do it once.
Since 1965. Yeah.
Right. How long is that on the doctor's timeline, though?
I think
like hundreds of years, thousands of years. Yeah,
I want to say. I think only like 600 years, right? Isn't he just over 1,000 now? Maybe 1,100.
Yeah. Okay.
But he was, I want to say, 400 years old when he regenerated as the first doctor.
Okay.
So I think we're at 600 or 700 years, but still, again, a lot of time for him to go back and see her.
Right. I did love the whole, there were some funny lines, like, do you have a time window? Like, we were forbidden from messing with time tech. You told us in 1970 that, 10 floors down.
That was great. Good comedic bit and timing.
Yeah, exactly. We were having the discussion on the Acolyte episode this week about the role of science in fantasy, and I would posit that Star Wars is much more scientific than Doctor Who. Doctor Who,
yeah, Doctor Who is really great at the technobabble.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just, if you actually know science, like, it was just gobbledygook explanations. Like, at least midichlorians yeah. is an attempt to make sense. Doctor Who's like, here's word salad.
Right.
But then in the word salad, there's this poetry. Like, I love, he said at one point, time has tides and hollows and secrets. It really mm-hmm. set the tone for that, you know, started to get creepy from that point on in the episode.
Time works exactly how the Doctor and the writers need it to work in that episode.
But they have this great new, lore reason why nothing has to make sense. Because he says, my memory of this keeps changing. Time keeps changing.
Right.
So they can rewrite everything now.
Right. That's interesting. And I'll get to, when we get to Sutek, why I think that might be part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way that the Doctor defeats Sutek the first time, I think, has to do with this issue.
Okay. What did you think of the whole guard death thing with the cloud of ominousness?
That was good.
That worked
for you? Good.
Yeah.
Didn't wow me, but it was good.
Okay. I do notice they're working really hard to explain why they couldn't just go back and look at Ruby's mother, but that's fine. I'll let that go.
Right. The one time you let somebody, you know, move. I mean, my theory right now is that there is no face to look at.
Hmm.
Like, something's been erased.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, could be.
Because they got really close to her.
Mm-hmm.
And they still couldn't see. I just don't think there's a face. I think that's an empty hood.
So, one thing is that the hood is the same as a character from the Sarah Jane Adventures called the Trickster, who was ID'd, who they use the word Pantheon in the Sarah Jane Adventures. I think that's where it originally came from. And now we had the Trickster name in this episode as part of the Pantheon again, of course. So, yeah, I wonder if the Trickster could be playing a role, just because it got really creepy with the whole, that moment with the pointing, like the Ghost of Christmas Future, you know? So I do wonder if that is not, and that's not to say that Ruby's mother doesn't exist, but maybe that's not Ruby's mother.
Right. Yeah, something's odd about it, and it's changing, so it could be anything.
Yeah.
And it could become anything. She could get a real mother at some point.
And apparently there was some storyline in Sarah Jane Adventures that involved, like, the Trickster having a child and it being abandoned or something like that.
Hmm.
But they didn't get to, like, see it through because it was canceled, I suppose.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. Was it canceled because she died?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know the timeline on that. I know she passed away shortly thereafter, but I don't know.
I didn't realize that. Oh, man. That's sad.
Oh, yeah. She passed, unfortunately.
Yeah. I was also shocked. I guess I knew that Ruby's about 20, but when they said she was born in 2004, I was like, what?
Yeah. Well, they said that in the church on Ruby Road.
Yeah.
So we're going back to Christmas Eve, 2004.
Oh my gosh. No.
I know. I said to my wife, I was watching this and she came in the room and I was like, do you know when that actor was born? And she's like, when? I said, 2004. She goes, that's disgusting. And she walked away.
That's disgusting. It's just, I don't mind that people were born after 2000. It's just like, how can they be adult shaped now?
They are. I mean, people who were born in 2000 are 24 now. And, you know, crazy.
I did love the stuff with Ruby's mother, though. I like when Ruby went back with Rose, who, by the way, I didn't even put Rose in the notes because Rose didn't really do much this episode. It was nice to see her, but she didn't really.
Yeah. She was around and that was fine. Yeah.
Anyone who doesn't know who she is, watch the 60th anniversary specials.
Right. I mean, in general, I would say justice for Carla, because Carla is such a good mom and
mm-hmm.
I just want the world for her.
Yeah.
And she's like, wait a minute, whose mom works for, yeah, Rose's mom works for UNIT, I'm coming.
Yeah, she's like, then Ruby, you can tell them, wait, if your mother's a part of it, then Ruby, you can tell her your mother's a part of it too.
Right.
And there, Kate Lethbridge Stewart is like, well, you know, there's security protocols, blah, blah, blah. Doctor's like, yeah, Sonic, come on up, Carla.
I love his line, though. He's like, it's Carla.
Yeah, come on.
Very funny.
Yeah.
And what's she going to do? I mean, he's this otherworldly power. What's she going to do?
Yeah. There's this exchange between them that sticks in my head. And I was wondering what you thought of it. So when things start to get heated and Ruby's like, Mom, you need to go home. And she's like, she's trying to convince Ruby to be safe and come with her. And Ruby just stops and says, what do you want to do? And she says, I want you to come home with me. And then Ruby says, then that means you're not helping here. I love you. Goodbye. That was like, especially keeping in mind that she is 20. That is really like the moment of I'm an adult now. I'm striking out right. And I can't deal with you being here worrying about me.
Yeah. And it was such a polite getaway. Mm-hmm. It was a polite send off. I think this was great. I think this was really, she's changed by traveling with the doctor. I think she's developed more of a sense of individuality. Individuality. Right. Sorry, I have to yeah. Do my Dairy Girl thing again.
I still have to watch a final season of that.
So good.
Yeah, I really like the first two seasons. I just, you know, Netflix, they do the binge drops and then I never catch up.
I know. Did you hear that Claire from, all right, you know what? I'm going to fast forward 30 seconds if you don't want a possible spoiler.
For Dairy Girls?
Yeah. Well, no, okay. For Doctor Who.
Oh, okay.
Claire has supposedly been considered to be a companion after the next one.
Oh, you mean Nicola Coughlan?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean,
well, she's in Bridgerton.
She's in Bridgerton.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But she was the main character in Bridgerton this season, which means because she's an important other character in Bridgerton. So she still has to work on that show, but that doesn't mean she can't work on other things.
Exactly. Yeah. I would like her. I think she would be a really funny
her.
Especially if they let her have that Irish accent and just like curse the doctor out. I think it would be really funny.
I like her. Her natural voice is, it's still Irish, but a bit lower and more melodic.
A little toned down?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's funny enough to see those videos of her like switching back and forth because she does, in Bridgerton, she does, you know, an RP accent and then she has, her own accent and she has that Claire mm-hmm. voice and she can just switch back and forth like that.
Oh, that's fun. You guys send me a video of that because that's funny.
Yeah. I posted one in the Discord. I'll tag you.
Oh, okay. Nice.
But yeah, so shall we take a break and then come back and talk about the villains?
Let's do it.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
We're back. Villain time?
Yeah, let's unleash the flood. Mrs. Flood. Dun, dun, dun. obviously, like, it felt like trouble as soon as she said, go and get Mrs. Flood. Like, no, do not bring this woman into your house.
Well, I was unsure if it was going to be trouble or if we were going to get a clue that that's Susan. I'm not convinced it's not Susan. I kind
the
of
granddaughter,
feel like,
Susan.
Yeah, I don't think they'd mention her this much if they weren't going to bring her back in some form. Just for a cameo. I don't think it needs to be like she's going to travel with the doctor again. I think it'd just be a cameo.
No, maybe next season, though. Maybe they're just like planting this for, because they have a lot to wrap up in one episode just with the Pantheon and Ruby's mother. And we don't know if those two things are connected.
Carol Ann Ford is 84. Hurry up, RTD. Just hurry up.
But yeah, she also, so she didn't seem like the Harbingers, like the other Harbingers we saw this episode, like even Sue Tech, because she seems aware the entire time of what's going on. And she wasn't just like normal nice lady walking around like Susan. She was like, as soon as she entered the apartment, the radio started staticking and there was warning of thunderstorms. And
yeah.
And she, her face didn't get all weird when she started at the end, when she started to say, "The one who waits, he waits no more."
Mrs. Flood, is she going to be Storm? Really? I think the X-Men 97 theme is about to start playing. What an earworm.
Yeah. I was just watching the documentary about the making of it. And
oh, really?
It was the 13th try to make a theme song. And they were like, yeah,
wow.
The one. Yeah.
That's fun.
Do you think Mrs. Flood, she said that she nursed her own mother. Do you think that's a real story? Do you think we'll find some, that, like, some god is the mother she nursed that she was like subjugated to? No? Okay.
I think she's just lying the whole time.
Okay. Could be. It would be interesting though.
Right.
So yeah, we got a bunch of names in the pantheon of Discord, but I also love that they clearly left it open to add more as they see fit, which smart.
Right, of course. You know, don't I like when they don't box other writers in. Which is why it infuriates me that Chibnall destroyed Gallifrey again.
Right. I mean, but they can always bring Gallifrey back. Or
I know,
or
but how many times can you do that?
Yeah, but you could also just like, Gallifrey still exists in the past. They can still visit it.
Yeah, but doesn't the Doctor have a whole thing where, like, if somebody dies, he can't visit them again? If somebody dies in his own timeline?
I don't know. I mean, as you say, it's as the plot for that episode sees fit.
That's true. That's true. I can't cross my own timeline until I can.
Yeah, until the plot says loophole. Right. So the Pantheon, we met Maestro, the god of music, this season. We met on the 60th anniversary, the Toy Maker, the god of games, who comes obviously from Classic Who. And by the way, I didn't realize this, but the Toy Maker is explicitly tied to the Doctor Who multiverse since the 8th Doctor in a 1999 novel. And so, yes, Doctor Who explicitly has a multiverse. It's not a new thing. They're not copying Marvel. It's just a prevailing scientific theory that's a lot of fun to think about.
Well, what about Rose getting trapped in an alternate universe?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I don't know why people are. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is not a new thing for sure.
So there's a couple interesting things. So there's a multiverse, and then there's a multiverse of multiverses, which is the Omniverse. So several layers up. And then the space between the different universes is the Void. And we've seen them like banish Daleks to the Void before. And the Void is a convenient place to banish them. And then, so we saw in the last episode with Rogue, he said that he was going to send the Childer to a random barren dimension. And then after Rogue accidentally got sent, the Doctor said there are as many dimensions as there are atoms in the universe. So we're definitely getting more multiversal stuff coming up.
Yep, definitely. The search for Rogue.
Yeah.
I think it's the right choice to have Rogue be a season two problem.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they set it up well, and there's enough to wrap up this season.
Right, right.
That's a hook to come back for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see it on season 28.
Oh, no, please.
I mean, technically, we're on season 40 if you never stopped, if you never restarted the numbering.
Well, I missed the first,
26.
Leading up to, 26, okay.
Yep.
Someday I'll go back and do what you're doing, but
it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm working on Star Trek now, though.
You know, I try Star Trek. Here's the thing. Here's why I'm a Whovian and not a Trekkie most of the time. Is that there's an absurdity to Doctor Who that I haven't found in Star Trek. Star Trek this self-seriousness that that kind of, it makes it harder for me to get into it because Doctor Who will make me accept the absurd premises faster because it's absurd, because it's got this joviality to it. and you because know, of the, you know, the charm of the doctor. And I know, what's his name? Kirk. He's uh-huh. pretty charming. You know, he's a handsome guy, but
he's
very serious, right? He's like, I am an action hero.
Uh-huh. You know, what's the best of both worlds is the Orville. And so, yes, if you've heard that the Orville, like, first episode is absolutely cringe, but then you immediately, like, within the first couple episodes, you get to your first episode about a Mauchline trial about a race that's clearly based in the Klingons, but it's all men, and children who are born female undergo mandatory sex changes as an infant, and there's a trial about it, and then, but there's all this like serious social commentary, and mm-hmm. None of this ends the way you think. But then at the same time, there's like ridiculousness on top of that, like one character who's like basically just like a horny blob.
All right.
So three seasons out of the Orville, everybody watch it and demand more.
Okay. Sounds interesting. Maybe I'll check that out next, but I still have another 400 episodes of Doctor Who to watch.
Right. Well, yeah, speaking of shows we have to catch up on. So The Trickster, the God of Traps, comes from the Sarah Jane Adventures, as we mentioned. So this also seems to be the origin of the name The Pantheon, or The Pantheon of Discord, as it was called there. And the Pantheon of Discord, they said, were banished from the universe at an unknown point in time. The Time Lords were aware of them and knew that they wanted to get into, apparently, I've just learned this term, have you heard the term end space before?
I don't think so.
I think this comes mostly from the books and comics, but end space is like the main Doctor Who universe.
Yeah, I'm wondering, was this at all in when the Daleks came through? Okay, according to the 11th Doctor, so we have, it's the prose version of the Day of the Doctor. So yeah, right. You're right, mm-hmm. This is definitely a whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems there's a lot of references in this episode alone to books and comics.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
That is.
So another random thing that was not, so they're calling this the Pantheon. The Pantheon before was mostly just like talking about the Trickster and a couple other that we'll mention. There was a separate villain, the Mara, which that's a fifth Doctor villain that got referenced in Torchwood once. And this is the God of Beasts. And this was not part of the Pantheon, but apparently is now, or, you know, is retcon. So the Mara is like a hive mind and dwelt in the dark places of the inside and sought physical existence by taking over a host in their dream. Another interesting thing about the Mara is that they've been previously linked to the fairies, as in fairies are part Mara. So I have to wonder if that has any links to what happened in 73 Yards this season.
It's gotta.
Mm-hmm.
I like this. I like that we're adding to this Pantheon and retconning all classic Who villains to be part of the Pantheon. I mean, Sutek is the same thing, right?
Right, exactly. Sutek wasn't Pantheon. Sutek was a siren. Yeah. And they also added some new ones. So they said reprobate, by the way, means an unprincipled person, but they said that reprobate is the god of spite. Incensor is the god of disaster, with her children doubt and dread. There's a threefold deity of malice and mischief and misery. And there are gods of skin and shame and secrets. And, you know, that just leaves the door open for any gods they want to add in the future.
Absolutely. Just anything. It's going to be like American gods, right? Like anything you think of, anything you have a devotion to becomes a god.
Right. Yeah. So Sutek was originally this Osirian. So they said that they were actually aliens, but they thought that, you know, humans thought that they were gods from a certain point of view.
Right. There were two pronunciations of Osirian in the Pyramids of Mars. It was Osirian and Osirian. It was Osirian. And I don't know which one's right.
I mean, the god is called Osiris, so I think Osirian, like the Egyptian god in the real world.
Yep. Who knows?
Oh, by the way, there was also, and I want to read this comic, there was also an Amy and Rory comic that says that Krampus, the, you know, the German Christmas spirit, or the East, you know, Central European Christmas spirit, is part of the pantheon.
Have you seen the Krampus movie?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love that one. I do kind of want to watch it for, I think I'm going to put it on a list. If I have any say in the list for our Christmas time episode of Elevensies, I want to put that on the list.
Okay. Well, so there's a companion one that's like the Dutch remake of it in a way, only remake is tied to, so we have, so Santa Claus in the U.S., actually, the name comes from a Dutch Sinterklaas, which is St. Nicholas, but like in Europe, St. Nicholas is a December 5th thing, you know, mm-hmm. And in the U.S. it got tied up with Christmas. So here, Sinterklaas comes on December 5th and like leaves candy and children's shoes, stuff like that, presents.
And there's going to be a Belschnickel movie.
Yeah. So anyway, they made a horror version of that. That's basically the plot of Krampus.
Well, that's fun. Plenty of Christmas horror around.
Yeah. No, it's a great subgenre. Because the veil is thin.
Yep.
So, yeah. So that brings us to Mother and Father and Other of them all, the God of Gods. His names are many. Set, Seth, Setek. One true name forevermore. Sutek. Dun, dun, dun.
In Pyramids of Mars, actually, the Doctor says that Satan is another name that he's known as.
Okay.
Which is interesting because we literally had another episode in class in New Who, The Beast Below, where there was a devil type being.
But maybe that's just a demon. I don't know. Yeah, it'd be interesting because then you start to get all the Christian mythology in there with, you know, Lucifer, the fallen angel. And
Right. And if you listen to Jewish biblical scholars, then Hasatan, the adversary, was never a devil at all. It was actually a prosecutor that God hired to prosecute the case against himself.
Okay. Well, so you watched the Pyramid of Mars after this episode, right?
Yes, I did.
So what did you think watching those back to back? What did you take from that?
Well, first of all, the Fourth Doctor has an amazing presence, and I cannot wait to get to him fully.
Okay.
Because he just owns the room in a way that I don't think
he's a lot of people's
John
favorites,
Pertwee
right?
Does. Yeah, he is. He's, I think, out of all the classic Who Doctors, he's probably the most listed as a favorite.
Mm-hmm.
I think I still like two better, but I've only seen one story of four, so it could change.
Okay.
It just incredible presence, crazy, memorable get up. With the scarf and everything and the hat. And his chemistry with Sarah Jean is great. Does a really great job of doing the otherworldly thing. You know, he's very cold and calculating in some ways. And she's like, you're barely. And he goes, human.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really, really great. Great acting. Mm-hmm. As far as the story itself, I think one of the best classic Who stories I've seen. I understand why it's known as one of the favorites.
Uh-huh.
They go back to ancient Egypt and, oh, sorry, it's not ancient Egypt. It's 1911 Egypt.
Okay.
And they, you know, there's archaeologists trying to take things up. And there's one who's trying to resurrect Sutek. And when I say resurrect, I actually mean bring back. Because the whole thing is that Horus had trapped Sutek under a pyramid on Mars that had like a lock on it.
Okay.
That's the whole deal. And so the pyramid does get unlocked. Because the Doctor gets mind controlled at one point, and it's a whole thing.
Right.
But the pyramid does get unlocked. But basically, Sutek goes through the portal between Earth and Mars that was in the pyramid that he couldn't move. That's why he was trapped.
Okay.
Sutek goes through that portal. And as he's going through the portal, the Doctor says, oh, well, it takes 2 minutes for radio waves, because the radio portal, for some reason, radio waves to get to Earth from Mars. So they run to the TARDIS, they go to the portal, and the Doctor takes the time, I forgot what it called it. I think it was like the time console out of the TARDIS, and he brings it in front of the portal, and Sutek's about to come out, and he's like, okay, I've rerouted the end of this portal to be very far in the future. He goes, how long do Osirians live? And Sutek doesn't answer, by the way.
Uh-huh.
Does not answer, just remains silent. He goes, well, and after he's gone, he says to Sarah Jane, oh, well, I sent him so far into the future that there's no way he'd survive the journey.
Okay. Oh, so yeah, that he would, I saw someone summarize it as like, he'd like age him to death, kind of.
Right, right. He'll be in the time vortex too long. Basically. Yeah. He'll be in this transport for so long, he must die. But I guess it wasn't long enough. I think that's what we're going with. But the other thing is, I think because he was trapped in this like timey-wimey thing.
Yeah.
Or perhaps because he was sent there, rerouted through the TARDIS, there is some kind of connection Sutek has with the Doctor's past. He's able to manipulate it.
Yeah, I mean, I was wondering if Sutek attached himself to the TARDIS when the TARDIS was, you know, at the edge of the universe and Doctor spilled the salt and said, I let some things in. And that's when we started to hear the groaning, but could have also been around much longer too.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if because he was at the end of the universe,
mm-hmm.
maybe that's where the Doctor let him out.
Yeah.
It's the farthest he's ever been, right?
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. I mean, yeah. The edge of the universe would be along the void. And if you smudge the barrier there, then yeah, if someone was in the void, they could get out.
Right.
I love right. just the introduction, though, was so dramatic and just really well done. Nice horror elements, you know, the God of death, and by his hand, all creation shall fall into dust and ashes and ruin. I love I wrote down the whole speech that Harriet gave, because it's just so creepy. It just gave me like goosebumps. So he is hidden in the howling void. He is hidden within the tempest. He has braved the storm and the darkness and the pain. And he whispered to the vessel. All this time he whispered and delighted and seduced. And the vessel did obey, for none shall be more mighty and none shall be more wise than the king himself. And the Lord of Time was blind and vain and knew nothing. Jon Snow. Sorry.
Great, great Harbinger moment.
Yeah. Yeah, it was cool makeup too, like the Scully makeup.
Yeah. Yeah, that was very cool. And I love... I just love this whole episode. And the more we talk about it, the more I'm like, yeah, this was very cool. There was just so much lore dumped into this.
Yeah, I liked all the details, too. Like, I started pausing things and paying attention to details. So we have Sutek on stage saying, I'm lost. I'm in hell. It's seen me. It's seen right into my soul. And it's so old. What is it? Waiting. It's been waiting for so long. And meanwhile, the teleprompter is flashing through its change to, I am the lost. I'm the never. I am the night. I am the terror. I am returning.
Like,
prime, good horror atmosphere. Good fun stuff.
You know, one thing that when Sutek was about to be rerouted, he says to the Doctor, no, I'll spare Earth at least. Just let me out. And the Doctor's like, no. So I wonder if because he offered to spare Earth and the Doctor denied him, he is just going to be like, yeah, I'm going to go for Earth first. That's why I'm talking here.
Yeah, because so it seems like Sutek's whole shtick is like very reminding me of Ishmael from Wheel of Time or Darth Nihilus for the Star Wars nerds.
He just wants everybody dead.
Yeah, but he thinks that it's a gift to that freeing from the tyranny of hope and choice.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's about right. He's like, I'm not hurting them. He's like, you're killing them.
Yeah. I'm helping them be free. Yeah.
Yeah. He says something like he has this, you know, of course, Doctor Who, classic Who has like a ton of like moral debates with the Doctor. And he's like, you know, you're evil. And he's like, you know, I'm evil in your eyes. In my opinion, you're evil.
Yeah. And I wonder, I love how they've set up this pantheon that like, so we have the Osirians in there, which were seen as the Egyptian gods, but this pantheon could really. We've gotten the teases of the fairies. We've gotten all these, like the pantheon could encompass almost all gods on Earth, basically, or all beings we see as gods.
Yeah. Have you looked up the design of Sutek in Classic Who?
Yes. I watched clips from the Pyramids of Mars. And actually, there were people on Twitter, of course, saying like, oh, new CGI is crap. It looked so much better in Classic Who. Like, what?
Get off your high horse. Just
what are you
stop
talking
yourself.
About?
Think about the words before they exit your Twitter mouth.
Oh, I thought that actually the CGI was, I don't know that Sutek looked as scary as maybe he should have, but he looked, I thought that they did good like CGI work in terms of making the muzzle, the way it wrinkled when it snarled and things like that.
The look of Sutek motionlessly moving through that portal mm-hmm. is absurd, and you should all be embarrassed for defending it.
Yeah. I mean, you can defend it as like high camp, but you cannot say it looks better.
Right, right.
It's like literally a plastic doll.
Right, exactly, exactly. I did see that. It looks like they got back the original voice actor, though.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. I think it is the same guy.
Okay. Well, I'm excited to find out more next week in Empire of Death.
Oh, yeah. It's coming.
Yeah. Unleash the gods of chaos. So, by the way, Russell T. Davies, he gave the official Doctor Who podcast a clue for next week. He said, somewhere far away, a kind woman waits with something that they need. So I'm wondering if this kind woman is Mundy Flynn coming back, because we know Virata Sethu is going to be the new companion next season, or if this is Ruby's mother.
Mm. I think it's more likely to be Mundy, because Ruby's mother far away? I don't know. I don't know.
I just keep thinking of like this trail that
Susan?
I see. Yeah, well, true. Could be.
She's far in the future.
And maybe Susan is Ruby's mother.
But then how did she get back? It's fine. Well, at the same time, we know that there's a second TARDIS landing
in the past.
In 2004.
Okay. You mean the doctors from the Christmas special?
Well, what I'm saying is we have the doctors from the Christmas special landing in 2004. He's like, okay, there's that. But then when they looked into the Sutek thing, it was the TARDIS within it. So I'm wondering if what allowed Sutek back in was the paradox of two TARDISes next to each other.
So
and that the doctor is going to be forced to pilot the TARDIS back in 2004 for some reason.
Okay. I don't know. Let's see.
I think there's going to be two TARDISes there at some point.
Yeah, I mean, but then if two TARDISes show up next to each other, a lot of people are going to expect David Tennant to step out.
Well, no, I think it's going to be Shooty twice.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be some reason why, whether he willingly or under control of Sutek, because we know Sutek has mind control powers, pilots the TARDIS back to 2004 again, and that's what's going to unleash Shooty. And maybe it'll be this circular thing where Sutek forces him to open the portal so that he can come back.
Okay.
You know, I love a good time loop.
Yeah. No, me too.
Well, lovely episode. Shall we get the listener feedback in?
Yeah, sure. So we got emails from two people, and I pulled one thing from Discord.
Very nice. Would you like me to read so you can give your voice a rest?
Do that.
Athena A says on the Discord, one thing I was talking about the other day to a friend and just wanted to throw out there for the finale. RTD is my favorite showrunner because he always made the companion feel essential and have such a lived-in life, building and baking all that human emotion and messiness into the plot. While Ruby had a lot of family-centric moments early on, we only have really gotten snippets after that first episode, and I really hope we get more of that in the finale. I feel like they will, but thought I would put that out there. What do you think, Alicia? Did we get enough?
I need specifically a lot more of what's
Cherry?
Grandmother's? Yeah, Cherry. Cherry
we
Sunday.
We love Cherry Sunday.
Especially now that they left her in danger.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I don't think she's in danger. I think she's going to kick that woman's butt.
No, yeah, exactly. I'm really hoping that they're setting, because she was so brilliant. She was one of my absolute favorite parts of the Christmas special, and they just have not really used her to great effect since.
When we cut back to her, Mrs. Flood is going to have a lump on her head and a cup of tea in her hand.
Right.
I'm convinced. Well, thanks, Athena. Arthur H. writes in on email. By the way, you can send your emails to at tardis@thelorehounds.com. Says, I am old school, starting with four in 1978, and generally I prefer my doctors to not get into romances, dating their companions, etc. However, if the doctor is to encounter the love bug, not just talking VW, but a great name for a villain, the answer is obvious. Oh, the doctor and the master should be friends. Oh, the doctor and the master should be friends. The doctor likes to help folks out. The master dreams of universal domination. But that's no reason they can't be friends. Gallifreyan folks should stick together. Gallifreyan folks should be pals. Doctor, dance with the master, Missy. The master, dance with the doctor, Gal. And if you don't get the Oklahoma Broadway reference, then I will feel old. I don't get that. Do you get that?
I mean, so I just, sang it in my head to the tune of the theme song from Oklahoma's Oklahoma, where the winds come rushing down the plains.
Oh. So I
don't know. I'm not sure I'm not sure if that's the correct reference, but that's what pops into my head.
Fair enough. Well, Arthur, thank you for writing in. I first of all, love the Fourth Doctor and glad you brought him up. I am really looking forward to getting to Tom Baker's era once I finish Pertwee. But on this idea of the Doctor and the Master romantically, do you think Rogue is the Master? That's been a topic of debate online.
I hope not. No, I don't think so. And I don't want him to be.
What if the ring is the smelted tooth? I'm just kidding. It wasn't gold. That's fair enough. But yeah, I don't want him to be the master either. I'm okay if he turns out to be evil, but I don't want him to be a villain.
I would rather just like, he can be complicated, you know, like there can be stuff that gets in the way, or maybe he did something bad, or, you know, who knows.
As complicated as an Avril Lavigne song.
Why you gotta be? Oh, now I have that in my head.
Oh, I'm sorry. Melissa, I'm gonna go back to Oklahoma. Do you know about that conspiracy theory?
Yes. I actually got sucked into, there was like a podcast episode about it. I was like, oh my God, I'm so not interested in this. And then I like cut to me three episodes later. Like, really?
Can you send that to me? Because I'm curious now. My wife was a big Avril Lavigne fan, and she told me the conspiracy theory that Avril died and they replaced her with a woman named Melissa. Mm-hmm. And I now need to know this podcast.
Okay, yeah, I'll send it to you.
Well, now that we're talking about Avril Lavigne in a Doctor Who episode, thank you, Arthur, for writing in. Lastly, we have Jordan M. after episode 6, Salute Le Lorehounds Gang. Okay. First of all, yes, Quebecois. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And thanks, Alicia, for the differentiation between French and French Canadian.
So Quebecois is just French Canadian, basically.
Yep, fair enough. As always, your class and intellect have no bounds.
Why, thank you.
Apologies all the same, John, for the French drops, though your pronunciation isn't too bad, mon cher. But here in Montreal, Franglish is but second nature. And we love promoting our little French language society up here. We'll have to help David with pronouncing Villeneuve.
Villeneuve, yeah.
Villeneuve?
Mm-hmm.
Though I just... J'étais...
Yeah.
Je t'aime,
yeah.
Oh, crap. I can't do this, David. You know, right after Jordan says my pronunciation isn't that bad, I'm just going to butcher every single French word I see.
I'm
about to assign the rest of this email to you. Just say this word for me.
Alors. So okay. Just like okay, or, you know, like the Italians say allora, or the Spanish say vale.
Yeah. Okay. Really enjoyed Dot and Bubble and think it may be my fave to date now. You both kept commenting on the future with Apple glasses and goggles or the like, but honestly, people already do the same thing with their existing devices. Especially with the FaceTime fad, I see people all the time walking around with their face totally immersed in their phones and oblivious to the real world. I think that is why I love this episode so much, because the devil on my shoulder is secretly hoping they fall into a sinkhole or the like while not paying attention. Sigh, the world needs more giant slug creatures. I don't know if I agree with you there, but I get the sentiment, Jordan. Yeah, people should watch while they walk. If you're in New York City and you're on your phone and not paying attention, you will get, you know, shoved. Not like with hands, but like you will get checked.
People aren't going to put up with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do appreciate that about New York City. We don't put up with that. Although I don't live there anymore. So now I have to put up with it. I've yet to hear your commentary on Rogue, though I am, of course, eager to do so. I'm shamefully a fan of the cheap dialogue and thrills from Bridgerton, plus all the himbo eye candy, which is likely Davy's draw as well, lol. So was giddy to see that this was the episode setting. But I was honestly worried that Davies wouldn't necessarily be relevant with his rebooted reboot. But the last two episodes seem to prove me wrong. Plus, I'm enjoying the more open Doctor Who doesn't seem... the more open Doctor Who doesn't seem to shy away from romance and even being the assertive one going after romance. A big change from the usually reticent Doctors of the past. Interesting because Jordan is happy the Doctor is pursuing romance. Arthur is saying, I don't want the Doctor to pursue romance. And so I don't think you can win with this. I think you just got to
side with Jordan. So
I'm fine with either one. I think what bothers me most about Doctor romances is like with Rose, like the girl is 19. Let's all chill. Okay. Mr. 700.
No, but this is like two consenting adults.
I'm good with that.
I can't remember who was saying this. Someone was saying that they preferred when the Doctor had romances with someone who wasn't their companion. So it wasn't.
Yeah, like River. Yeah.
Right. So it's not like the driving force of the plot. It doesn't just become like a rom-com or whatever, or drama. But it's an element.
Also, can I bring this in? I'm going to go back to the Doctor not having children. Does Jenny mean nothing to him? I mean, I know he thinks that she's dead.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see her come back, though. Get the other tenant back. So, Jordan continues and says, anyways, my earlier slightly negative opinions of the show are growing way more positive as the series progresses, and I'm looking forward to the two-part finale. Also hoping that now Disney is involved, we won't have to wait so long for another season. I think that's right, and I don't know if it's Disney. I think it's actually RTD who's pushing for a yearly release.
Mm-hmm.
And they've filmed season two already.
Right.
That's done. I think they're prepping to film season three now.
Keep the content train rolling. I do miss once a year releases, but that's the thing about Doctor Who is it's not an overcrowded IP as long as they don't start doing like five spinoffs a year and stuff.
Right. And I think somebody did the math because people were complaining about the only 8 episode length, and somebody did the math and they said, well, with the gaps between seasons in New Who or series, you would actually get more episodes with this current model than you did in New Who.
Right. So shorter seasons, but more frequently.
Right.
Hmm.
So I'm good with the annual release of 8 episodes. That's good with me. Or 9 episodes with the Christmas special.
Mm-hmm.
As always, un grand merci à vous deux. Thanks for providing so much quality content. Now on to hear what you think about The Acolyte. All I can say is, oh, Jordi, je suis verklempt. After episode #7, After episode 7, Jordan wrote in again and said, just caught up in real time, so figured I'd send a quick message. Was on the edge of my seat the whole time of The Legend of Ruby Sunday. If I truthfully could care less about whatever the legend might be, haha. I'm a sucker for the Lethbridge family and love when Davies brings back some of the Doctor's family, Kate, Rose Noble, and Mel. For a little action and adventure reunion. Davies also has a knack for casting, as Susan Twist is just phenomenal, in my opinion. My one pet peeve remains the find out my real mother adoption trope. I know it's supposed to be the mystery of the season, but I find that I just don't care. Ruby already has the best mom at her side. Alors, that said, I will be writing back later on sharing this reveal. Haha, so take that with a grain of salt. As always, un gros merci. Maybe. For all your content. Whatever. You know what? I'm moving on.
You're the best.
Oh, thank you. Cheers and sante me ami.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you, Jordan. I'm trying with the French. I feel like Alicia wants me to read these ones so that I could just stumble my way through all the French.
No, this is going to be like, it's you come for the Doctor Who coverage, you stay for the French lessons, and we're all going to have a good basic level of French by the end of
the season. You know what, Jordan? just go back to your Tim Hortons and leave me alone. All right. Enough Canadian jokes. Programming notes quickly. I have, I can tell us what we're doing based on the podcast schedule for the week.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a ton going on. We had, season 2, episode 1, A Son for a Son for House of the Dragon. Really great episode. We did a full coverage on that. And then for patrons and Supercast subscribers, we did a quick reaction right after the episode. The Acolyte, season 1, episode 4. That's going to be on your feed, Alicia, Star Wars Timeline podcast. Plus also the Doctor, it's not Doctor Who, the Star Wars feed for the Lorehounds and the main feed. Silmarillion Stories, episode 15, The Return of the Noldor, part 2 with Maester Anthony. And he brought a guest. I'll leave that one as a surprise. That'll be out this week as well. Then you are doing an MCU episode too?
Yes.
What's it on?
So we're going to be, it's Sean and I, and we're going to be like catching up on Marvel news and also X-Men stuff, like his reaction to the season and also what's going on in the comics now. And then we have ranked all of the Fox Marvel movies, because, you know, Deadpool and Wolverine is basically Deadpool kills the Fox Marvel universe. So we're going to tell you which ones are worth your time watching and what you can do if you want to prep for Deadpool and Wolverine coming out next month.
That's pretty funny. I'm looking forward to you deciding on a title for that.
I've been thinking about it. There's going to be a plus sign in it. It's going to be like Marvel News plus Deadpool and Wolverine prep.
That's pretty funny.
Oh. And on Wool Shift Dust, I have an interview coming out this week with co-showrunner of Beacon 23 Season 2, Glenn Matsara.
Very cool. I love that you got the co-showrunner. You're doing the whole thing, sending the emails.
Yeah.
Rings and Rituals is going to be back next week. Marilyn and Sarah will be talking about Chapter 8, Alloyed, the last episode of Season 1 of the Rings of Power. Really great show. They're talking about everything through the lens of Tolkien and ritual. I hope that everyone will check that one out. And then there's going to be an interview with me on right after, I think 2 weeks after the last episode of the season. So I talked about the music of Rings of Power with Marilyn, and that was a great conversation. So definitely subscribe to that feed. And Radioactive Ramblings is covering The Boys. I guessed it on that. I've been busy this week. I guessed it on that. I did about a half hour with them before they got into their full review. They're also doing a couple lore episodes that I have no idea what they mean, but they are Fallout Lore Episode 4, The Master, and All Knowings Lore Corner, Timeline of the Lands Between.
Hmm.
So you can decide what that means.
Or listen and find out.
Right. Properly Hour Movie Review is our last thing to cover. They did Hero at Large this week as part of their Fellinis and Fugazis season on all these crime movies. A lot of fun over there. Stephen Anthony, joke around. You don't need to watch the movie. Just go listen. It's very fun. Alicia, give me the thank yous.
All right. Well, first we need to thank our Discord server boosters, Gnarls, Aaron K, Tiller the Thriller, Dork of the Ninjas, Doob71, Captain Gingy 56, and Athena Agilea. And then we need to especially thank our lore masters who make this whole thing possible. And that's Sam Martian, Michael G, Michelle E, David W, Brian P, Nick W, SC, Peter OH, Bettina W, Adam S, Nancy M, Doob71, Brian 8063, Frederick H, Sarah L, Gareth C, Eric F, Matthew M, Sarah M, DJ Miwa, Andra B, Kwong Yu, Deadeye Jedi Bob, Nathan T, Alex V, Aaron T, Sub-Zero, Aaron K, Dally V, Mothership 61, Gnarls, Kathy W, and always last, Adrian.
All right, everyone. Thanks for journeying with us through time and space. We'll see you for the season finale. The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
Hey, Mark, I was listening to Paramore the other day, and it really made me think about the amygdala and the limbic system.
You just made those words up, didn't you?
What, Paramore?
We're the Nevermind the Music podcast, where one musician
and one psychologist
talk songwriting and the mind, one song at a time.
We'll hear everything from Green Day and Outkast
to Stevie Wonder and Dua Lipa.
And we mostly try to stay on topic.
Except for when we don't want to.
Nevermind the Music, wherever you get your podcasts.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.